Those of us blessed with more predictable, safe, and loving conditions then entered our adulthood with a higher trust IQ. And others of us may have had mixed or shifting experiences that left us somewhere in between those two. Now, wherever you may have fallen or continue to fall on that continuum, the good news for us all is that both the nature and nurture side of trust, neither of them is deterministic. Increased social bonding, increased intimacy, greater compassion, all of them can increase our oxytocin levels and therefore expand our nature part of trust. Practicing trust, facing our fears, taking risks, gaining success at processing and integrating instances where trust was violated, all of these can shift our feelings and our behaviors regarding trust. So we can all learn more healthy patterns of trust and unlearn any healthy patterns we may have regarding mistrust. As we mature, obviously we're going to begin encountering people who are trustworthy and some who are not. For some of us, sadly, the people we found untrustworthy may have been our parents and family. Some of us may have first experienced that with a friend or a group of friends, a romantic interest, our first spouse, a community or group, or many of those. Some of us may have had our trust violated in quite significant and life transformative ways. All of these accumulated life experiences teach each of us that trust is inherently a risk. Whether or not someone proves to be trustworthy depends on them. Things that are out of our control are anxiety producing. Humans are complex and not always predictable, and we are not in control of the actions of others. So that realization can engender fear in our relationships. How do I know who is trustworthy? Which of these people lives with integrity? We can begin to doubt our instincts and intuition about the characters of others. We might even begin to self-sabotage relationships out of fear, as Hildegard did with me years ago. When we fear placing our trust in others, what we are fearing is the disappointment and hurt that we imagine will occur when we trust and commit to others. So authors on trust say that it is a myth that people fear intimacy and closeness. That's not actually what we fear. We want and need intimacy. It's a biological impulse and need. And it's that biological need that is not engendering the fear. What we fear is what our imaginations create or believe the future may hold when we fully place our trust in others. Sometimes those fears may very well be grounded in past experiences that left us bruised and wary. And indeed, protecting us from harm, at least for a time, is a very sensible response. However, at some point, we do need to trust again for the sake of our own happiness and fulfillment. If we do not, we're allowing fear to overrule our need for trust and for friendship and love and connection. We as human beings are equipped with a remarkable capacity to work through our past and our negative experiences. When we've reached a point where we're able to address, to process, to resolve, and eventually integrate our past dysfunctions and mistrusts and hurts, we improve our abilities to engage negative experiences that come in our future. So in other words, success at integrating a negative experience now means I'll have greater success at processing negative experiences in my future. Just as importantly, perhaps even more importantly, when we meet success at challenging, processing, and integrating negative experiences, it makes us like ourselves more. We come to like ourselves more because we begin to have trust in ourselves and our ability to handle what life brings. I'm not going to fear a negative experience in my future if I have greater trust and faith in myself that I have faced this before. Yes, it hurt. Yes, it was terrible, but I processed it. I reintegrated it into my life experience. I can do so another time in the future, should that occur. So all of this then begins to snowball. When we are able to process those negative experiences, we come to like ourselves more. We can enter into trustworthy experiences without as much fear. Others begin to sense that and pick up on that. We become more appealing to be around. We become more desirable socially and romantically. All of this will add up to a greater faith in our intuition, in our sense of trustworthiness, in our trust IQ, and we begin to make much better decisions about who is trustworthy. So each of us, over the course of our lives and as a result of our life experiences, we begin to sensibly learn that trust needs to be done conditionally, not universally. Trust exists in the present, but it's based on our past experiences with future probability in mind. Trust begins as a belief about the other that we're encountering, based on our own instincts, our own suppositions, and our promises that we receive from the other. As evidence builds that someone is indeed of trustworthy quality, trust then can become a quality of the relationship. And our experience of that relationship begins to engender feelings of security and safety that we're able to bring our true selves in our interactions with that individual. And we'll have confidence that they support and protect us. So the more we begin to experience trust, the more we experience those safe relationships, the greater we can grow our own trust IQs. But the reverse can also happen. So our trust IQs begin to go down, and they will begin to snowball in a negative direction when we remain with people who are not trustworthy. So in other words, our trust IQ and our trust in ourselves will be impacted both positively or negatively based on who we trust. So trust, it's a risk. As a whole, Unitarian Universalists have a positive opinion of human nature and of humanity. As a community, we believe most humans are inclined to be good most of the time. And I think it is fair to say our optimism toward humanity is embodied in our principles. The first, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. The second, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. And our sixth, the goal of world community. All of them presuppose that humans are disposed to work towards the greater good. Yet, even though we have a generally positive view of humanity, that doesn't mean that we're fools. Right? We don't believe every single member of humanity is inherently and automatically trustworthy. Optimism, having faith in humanity as a whole, doesn't mean that you're being foolish or gullible. We're well aware evil people and evil things exist. Sometimes people make bad and selfish choices. And even people that behave from a place of goodness can make mistakes or cause hurt unintentionally. But if we're trustworthy and we have a basic level of trust in humanity, we assume, therefore, good intentions, at least most of the time. So optimism can lend itself then to faith and confidence in those we encounter, while at the same time holding the fact that hurt can and does happen. Hurt will happen to everyone sometimes. Yes, risk will mean sometimes we get hurt. But hurt is different from harm. Harm is inflicted and is about a choice to purposefully cause harm. So the difference between a hurt and a harm could be an important distinction for us in deciding which relationships are worth further investment and retrusting again if there is an accidental violation of trust or an unintentional one. Now, though we can't trust everyone, anyone can trust us if we're living with integrity. When we practice compassion and integrity, we will never be prone to conning or tricking others. Now, that doesn't mean we won't inadvertently cause hurt sometimes. That can happen, but we won't cause harm if we're living with integrity. When we act with wisdom and integrity, we'll be able to better let go of unworthy motivations in ourselves and be better alerted to potential unworthy or opportunistic motivations of others. So trust, then, I see it as a balance. It's a balance between both our head and our heart. Have you ever known someone who's been engaged in a romantic relationship and it's as though their brain fell out while they were in the bathroom and it got flushed down the toilet? Right? That when we pursue a relationship, whether it's romantic or otherwise, we need to hold both our emotions and our heart, but also our intuition and our wisdom and our common sense that our head offers us. We need to hold them both at the same time. When we trust, we don't want to be so gullible and vulnerable that we fall prey to con artists or narcissists by using only our heart. At the same time, though, we don't want to be so guarded that we lose out on trustworthy relationships and human connections right before us if we're using only our analytical head. In addition to the idea of a trust IQ, another important notion that I'd like for us to contemplate today is the idea that trust is best thought of as a verb. Trust is a relational process between people. In a way, it's a form of a social contract, an unwritten social contract. It's a kind of covenant. And in fact, trust is the foundation of all human connections and all human communities. We place trust in romantic relationships, friendships, co-workers, family relationships, in professionals, and in public officials. And in most all the situations I could think of, the people we're placing trust in, they know that we're doing so. Sometimes they may not know us personally. So such is the case with public officials. A public official might not know us personally, but they still know that we're placing trust in them. Now, at this particular moment in time, yes, many of us might have kind of a feeble trust in many of our public officials, but nonetheless, right, as a representative of democracy, our nation does depend on a public trust in the people that we elect to represent us. This congregation also relies on trust in a number of ways. You all have placed trust in me, and I don't take that lightly. You've placed trust in the people you have elected to be your leaders. You've placed trust in one another. Trust is a fundamental part of Unitarian Universalism, just as it is with most any human community. So with trust now in our minds and in our hearts, I've got two challenges for you today. The challenges relate to the quote that's on the order of service from author David Rico in the book Daring to Trust. And I'll read it to you. The quote is this: "One of the precious qualities of trust is its tendency to spread." So my two challenges relate to, we're going to work on spreading some trust. Okay, challenge number one. Hug somebody. Hug lots of somebodies. Remember that human touch releases oxytocin. It helps us to feel better about ourselves and about others. So when the choir finishes our postlude today, if you have a hug to give, offer it to someone. If you could use a hug, ask someone if they would mind providing it. Now, please mind everyone's boundaries and be sure to ask. And it's totally okay if you're not up to a hug today. But if you have hugs to spread them around. I'll be over at the door if you need a hug. $1 each. No, that's just a joke. They'll be free. So more hugs will equal more oxytocin, which will equal more trust. So let's add some more trust to our lives and to the world, and we'll start it with a hug party. Okay, challenge number two. This one's a little bit more difficult. I encourage each of us to consider a relationship where trust has been violated. A situation where you'd like to make it better. So maybe you were the one who violated the trust, or maybe you were on the receiving end of a trust violation. Maybe you inadvertently caused a hurt or even a harm. So after each of us have located that relationship that we'd like to make better, I'd like for us each then to decide what it is we can do to make that better. It could mean that we work on facing that and processing it and reintegrating it into our lives. That could be one way to address the situation. Perhaps it could mean making an apology. Maybe in some cases you might like to reestablish trust with an individual where trust has been lost. Or at least, you know, you could make an initial step in that direction. So this challenge is certainly for ourselves, but depending on the situation you decide to address and how you address it, it could lead to generating renewed trust and renewed human connection in your life. If after this challenge you have a story you would like to share about, please send it to me via email and I'll include them in the next Unigram. And you let me know whether or not you want your story to be anonymous. And if we end up with a whole lot of stories, great, I'll figure that out. It'd be wonderful. That'd be a good problem to have if I have too many stories. I'd like to close with another quote from David Rico's book. Only as people who become able to trust can we proceed along the path to a healthy, fulfilled life. Being human means we need human connections. As our image for the week indicated, oh, and it's still up there. Fear takes us off the path. Trust will take us to the destination of fulfillment and connection. May each of our lives become filled with trust and loving connection. So may it be.